Well, good morning.
You know what? Sometimes when I am looking for a passage, it's because it's something that God says that I want you to project. And I had been looking for this scripture text, and I couldn't find it. I couldn't remember where it was. Even John Rempel does that. And when I was preparing for this particular message, I kept emailing myself the revisions and stuff that God put on my heart, because if I'd be at work, I'd quickly continue with that document, and then at the end of the day, working day, I didn't want to have to go back to the office to look at it again, so I would email it to myself. And this morning at home, when I was going to print out what I had readied, I couldn't find paper, except, you know, the really long stuff, right? And I was looking through scraps, and we have lots of scrap paper, but I'd used so much of both sides of those already. And I wanted to print this out, and all I could find was orange paper. And there were three sheets. Fortunately, I only needed two, so we have one left in the house. And I promised my wife I'd get more, but as I was reading this, I was like, I don't know that I've ever printed a message on orange paper before. And well, this morning, I just stuck this into my Bible, and I thought, okay, here we go. And I opened up my Bible, and it was kind of funny because in orange highlighted box was the verses I'd been looking for. Isn't that cool? Yeah. So I'm not going to read them. No, of course I'm going to read them. But, you know, it's going to sound like, well, and you know what? It can. You can receive these words as well. But for me, I receive them for me, okay? So come into my head a little bit. Therefore, tell Israel, message of God, the Master, I'm not doing this for you. Israel, I'm doing it for me, to save my character, my holy name, which you've blackened in every country where you've gone. I'm going to put my great and holy name on display, the name that has been ruined in so many countries, the name that you have blackened wherever you went. And then the nations will realize who I really am, that I am God when I show my holiness through you so that they can see it with their own eyes. And this is something that brings me encouragement. And these sound like words that wouldn't, right? Like, you've blackened my name and things like that. But God's saying, it's all right. You do these things, but I will make good of this. You just wait. I love that because it's his promise. As I was readying, the thought that went through my mind was, what if it was tomorrow, and today we knew what tomorrow would bring? What if it was tomorrow, and today we knew what tomorrow would bring? Would you live this moment differently? It's kind of interesting because the story that came to my mind, and some of the young people here will have heard parts of this story before, but I remember I was helping my dad in his shop. He was building a new shop for his printing press. We had just got some really old equipment out of Pilot Mound, which was interesting because years later, I would be reconnected with Pilot Mound. It's just how God works. But we got these old Heidelberg presses. They were from Germany. They were actual Heidelberg presses. I don't know how many of you know printing equipment, but this was like old equipment, but it was so reliable. And we had it all in this big area, nice new concrete slab. It was all roughed. Like, Dad didn't really plan on finishing this shop a lot, didn't need to. But he did need electricity, and he did need lights. And it was already getting dark. It was already evening. And I was up in the rafters, and I had this box, and Dad was pulling on wires, and I said, hey, Dad, you've got this box upside down. Instead of it coming down, he had it pointing up, and he had secured it. I don't know how he did it, but he did it. And Dad was one of these guys that he didn't like turning off electricity because men don't do that. We work with live stuff, right? And so he's yanking on this wire, and I said, Dad, 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 and he pulled really hard, and he stripped part of it, and all I could hear was and him falling down off the ladder. I'd never heard my dad swear before, but he did, and he wasn't laughing, and I got to be honest, I was. Because I was at the top and I was like, I so told you, you know. Well, Dad just said, go to your room. And I was like, go to your room? You know, and I was about 15 at the time and I was like, sure, I'll go to my room. And so I went to my room and I waited for a while. And I was thinking, huh, how did Dad make that about me? How come Dad was angry at me? And I sat there, and all of a sudden I heard footsteps coming up the stairs to my room, and I was like, okay, here we go. What it is, it is. And he opens up the door, and he's got this smile on his face. And in my mind, I'm thinking, he's going to apologize. My dad had never apologized. And he looked at me, and he said, you are the most useless person I've ever met. I don't know why we had you. Wow. And I, at that point, was kind of locked into this moment of, do I receive this as truth? Or even worse, do I make this into truth? And I decided I was going to make it into truth. I would be the most useless person he had ever met. And I was. For about 2 years, I was useless to him. And I didn't think at that time, what if it was tomorrow? And today we knew what tomorrow would bring. Would I have lived that moment differently? Now, I'm convinced I would have. But it was a decision I made. It was a conscious choice that I made. And you know, as much as I would like to say I regret it, I can't. Yeah, of course, you know, there's things in your life you go, man, I wish that would have been different. There's lots of things I wished would have been different. But it did help to define who I was becoming. Because while I was becoming very disloyal to my father, I became extremely loyal to my mother. And she became my hero. And there was this really weird tension. Because my dad was a minister. And my mom ministered. My dad had the title. My mom had the action. I followed mom. And she really did become my hero. She just grew me. And again, there was this weird tension there because I knew that what I was doing to my dad was wrong. But I was hoping he would be the dad and I could be the son. And he'd come up to me and say, sorry. But you know, that never happened. I was, I'm going to say 14, 15, 16, in that range. If I went back, I could probably remember exactly. But it wasn't until I became 37 years of age that I got to have that conversation with my father. But I had to be the one that went to him and said, hey, Dad, do you remember this? No. You don't remember this? No, I don't remember this. This was like a pivotal moment in my life, and to him at that point, it seemed to me it meant nothing. How does that make sense? And it's not that he chose for it to be nothing. It's just, that was my dad. And Dad was, at that point, a very hard person. And he said a lot of hard things. And he said to me a couple of times, I wanted to break you. You just weren't breaking. And I had said to him, if I would have known that's what you wanted, I would have done it. But I had no idea. And I'm glad. I'm really glad that I did not break. Because I think my life would have been different if I would have known what that tomorrow was going to be like, right? And Dad and I, for the last 10 years of his life, had a great relationship. There was never a spoken word of, I forgive you, Dad, or even asking me to forgive. It was an action. I thought back of my mom and I thought, oh my goodness, if I've had a hard life, how hard a life did my mom have? Now, some of you will know my parents. They both died, so you can't go tattling on me. But their journey to where they were now, before they died, what an awesome journey it was. To see my dad experience freedom, to see him released from what that oppression looked like on him. Because, like, if you think of it, if he was that hard and he didn't remember, what did his life look like? And then you go back and go, oh, that's right. He had two full-time jobs. He was completing his grade 12 education at the age of about 40 because he thought it was important. And mom had two part-time jobs. and raising 9 children, which would have been easy, right? I was very easy. No, I wasn't. But that was their life. I'm not justifying what Dad did. What Dad did, said, was not right. In fact, it was wrong. But what I found was the words that he spoke were not the sin. It was his heart that believed that that could be true. It was the heart that spoke it. What is so attractive about tomorrow? What promises do we have in it? When tomorrow arrives, does it mean that yesterday did not happen? I wanted that yesterday not to have happened. But see, what happened was when Dad said those words, that you're the most useless person ever, wish we never had you, and I chose to adopt that as my lifestyle, I only chose that for him. In all other aspects of my life, I tried so hard to prove that I was worth having been born. I worked really hard at it. Sure didn't know what that was supposed to look like. Okay, now these verses out of Matthew are verses that I've taken so much comfort from. Matthew chapter 6, if you wanted to read with me. It's verses 25 to 34. Now, picture a young man, me, had not yet made a conscious decision to follow Jesus. And these words were bringing me comfort, okay? Matthew 6, 25 to 34. If you decide for God, living a life of God worship, it follows that you don't fuss about what's on the table at mealtime or whether the clothes in your closet are in fashion. There's far more to your life than the food you put in your stomach, more to your outer appearance than the clothes you hang on your body. Look at the birds, free, unfettered, not tied down to a job description, careless in the care of God. And you count far more to him than birds. Has anyone, by fussing in front of a mirror, even gotten taller by so much as an inch? All this time and money wasted on fashion, do you think it makes that much difference? Instead of looking at the fashions, walk out into the fields and look at the wildflowers. There's one part of this, as I was reading this for this last couple of weeks, I had never caught before. But it's a truth. They never primp or shop. But have you ever seen color and design quite like it? The 10 best-dressed men and women in the country look shabby alongside them. If God gives such attention to the appearance of wildflowers, this is the part, most of which are never even seen. Don't you think he'll attend to you, take pride in you, do his best for you? What I'm trying to do here is to get you to relax, to not be so preoccupied with getting so you can respond to God's giving. Seems like a contradiction there, right? Don't be preoccupied with getting. Respond to God's giving, which means we are getting. But the focus isn't on the getting. It's on what was given. Huh, it's brilliant. People who don't know God and the way he works fuss over these things, but you know both God and how he works. Steep your life in God reality, God initiative, God provisions. Don't worry about missing out. You'll find all your everyday human concerns will be met. Give your entire attention to what God is doing right now, and don't get worked up about what you may or may not happen tomorrow, or rather what will or will not. God will help you deal with whatever hard things come up when the time comes. Now, how does a boy that doesn't knowingly know he's a Christian yet go to these verses for comfort? I think when you're hurting, when you're broken, you go to any place that provides comfort. Why do you think Youth for Christ is so successful? That's our reality. Kids constantly coming. A young man, I'll just go back to here first. Gotta check the time. Okay, young man, he is, this is a Friday. So remember the tomorrow and today stuff? Think of this. It's Friday. Monday, you're getting a check for between $10,000 and $15,000 from MPIC. It is Friday, and on Monday, you're getting that check. But on Friday, you say, oh man, Monday is so far away. You have waited for this check for almost 2 years. It is Friday. Monday, you're getting the check. Friday, this young man says, oh, I can't wait. And he goes and steals a car. Only problem, and you'll find out later why, it's a small car. He goes out into the country, about an hour, hour and a half from here, and he hears through the grapevine that this one farmer has a gun cabinet. And he decides, I'm going to steal that gun cabinet with the guns. I'm going to sell it so I can get money on Friday. So he does this. He goes to the farm, breaks in, does a beautiful job of breaking in. And then he sees this gun cabinet, and it's enormous. And there is absolutely no way of getting that gun cabinet into this small car they've stolen. I'm thinking, if you know you're stealing something big, steal something big to put it in. Right? No, he steals a small car. And while he and his associate are trying to tie this thing down on top of this car now, the homeowner pulls up onto the yard, and the homeowner is a judge. Ooh. I'm thinking he has sealed that, right? Well, as it turns out, he did about 17 months in jail. I got to pick him up. Okay? And it was kind of cool because he is standing in what's basically, well, maybe about half of this room, maybe a third of this room. And there's razor wire at the top, but it's the exit or the entrance. You either leave the prison through there or you enter the prison through there. He was coming out, and he was standing, and he's kind of standing close to the gate, but not close enough to the gate, because he has outstanding charges still. He's not sure if they're actually going to let him out of jail. But all of a sudden, he hears the door, and it goes click, and the door is slowly, right, it's louder. But, and he doesn't wait, and he's not a small guy, but he doesn't really wait until the door is completely open. As soon as there's a crack, he's already trying to squish through there, because he's thinking, what if they only open it up at this far? But they did open it, and he did get through, and he came and sat in my car. And when I sat in the car with him, I remembered, for the most part, these guys don't use soap. Wow, was that pungent. He so stank. And it was just this intense smell of poverty. That's what I smelled. Oh, man. I couldn't remember. At one point, I thought, was it hot or was it cold out? And I do remember. It was like really, really hot outside. But the air conditioning just wasn't cutting it. And I rolled down the windows, and I lied. I said, you know, I'm just really cold. I need some warm air. And I just wanted to breathe. But as you drove with him, he got used to the smell. It became just part of atmosphere. And I didn't need the windows up, down, didn't matter, air conditioner, whatever. You got used to it, and I thought, why wouldn't he be used to it? He's been getting used to it for 17 months. It took me just this little window to get used to it. So we're driving. And some of you will remember this, but we're driving, and I said, okay, dude, within limits, what is one thing that you would like right now? If I could buy you anything within limits, I said, what would you like? And almost without hesitation, he says, I'd like a Dr. Pepper. I was not expecting a Dr. Pepper. I was thinking, let's go for a big breakfast. Can I have steak and eggs? Whatever. So we pulled into this gas station, actually, and he got a 2-liter of Dr. Pepper. And he hugged that thing all the way to Morton. He never opened it. I did ask him on route why, and he says, because in jail we don't get Dr. Pepper. Do you think if he would have thought back on that Friday that Monday would have happened and he would have just taken that check? I don't think so. When your desperation is at that place on the Friday, Monday doesn't exist yet. When you're trying to think, how do I deal with today, right now? What do you even care about Saturday? Never mind Monday. And we can sometimes sit there in judgment and say, dude, are you really this stupid? No, he's just really that desperate. He's really that broken. The same young man is being sentenced. He's going to be doing considerably more jail time. And in fact, it looked like the window was going to be anywhere from 8 till 11 or 12 years. But because he had made such progress, they thought, you know, he might get just 2 years. And with good behavior, if he goes to the federal institution, he'll be out in about 7 or 8 months. But you know what? He kept going to court, and they kept saying, next time we'll sentence you. Next time we'll sentence you. And they didn't sentence him. And there were a lot of us that were already phoning just saying, sentence him. He is liable to do foolish things. You've got him in this horrible place. And you know what? He started doing horrible things again. And now before he's even being sentenced, he's back in jail because he got caught for some break and enters. And I'm thinking, you guys had the chance. Even just putting him into this institution and saying, okay, we're not sure for how long, but time starts now. That's my thinking, right? He's thinking, the longer I can stay out of jail, the more likely I'll stay out of jail. He's thinking in his mind, somehow, mystically, they're going to forget about me. And why wouldn't he? Time after time, you go to court and they keep saying, oh, you know what? It's not that serious. Next time. It was that serious. And he was ready to pay for those consequences. God will help you deal with whatever hard things come up when the time comes. God is a God of promise. And his promises are always in the moment, forever. That is not a contradiction. That's how he works. For myself, my coming to Christ experience on my 17th birthday, actually, you know, it was actually kind of a cool testimonial. You know, you get to say it's a near-death experience kind of thing. But if I really thought about it, which I did later, because God started making more sense to me, my salvation was intact. My salvation was in place way before I accepted Jesus. Because if Jesus is telling the truth, that all I have to do is believe in his name, well, I did way more than that. I believed who Jesus was. My dad was a minister preaching this stuff. I didn't want to believe what my dad said, but I believed the truth in it at a very young age. And I was always afraid before I made this decision, meaning that I made it public, that if I didn't make it public and I died, I would go to hell. My mom on her deathbed said something brilliant to me. She said, I wonder if I'll see Hitler in heaven. What? And I'm like, are you nuts? And she says, who are we to say? Like, oh my goodness. I guess that's true. We don't know what his last thought was. That was a desperate man. And Jesus says, I came for the desperate. And you know, another interesting thing is he married an Eva Braun. She was a Mennonite woman. He found the Mennonite people to be a hard-working, true people. So he did recognize some truth, which means he was looking for it. So who are we to say? Okay. I didn't get permission to say this young man's name, so I won't, but if I make up names and they're different as we go along, so be it, right? Okay, but it's the same guy I'm talking about. Young man had just moved from Winnipeg to another community. And in this new community, there were some musicians that were coming. And it was from a church that he used to attend. And one of the ministers kind of recognized this young man, and he came up to him and introduced himself. And it wasn't like a paid minister, but somebody that called himself a minister came up to him and he shook his hand. He says, hey, you're from Winnipeg. He says, yeah, yes, I am. He says, did you know that there was a church in Winnipeg where one of the pastors was sleeping with one of the women in the church? I said, oh, really? This being he. And he says, yeah. I said, oh, do you need to share this with me? He said, and, well, I don't know. And he had just this look of, do you know something I don't? And he says, well, what church was it? And he mentions the church. And he says, oh, And then he had evidently stepped forward and he says, that's me. That was my wife. Do you think at that moment that minister thought to himself, oh man, I wish tomorrow was yesterday and I could rethink this, or tomorrow was 3 weeks from now and I could really think this through? When you act in today, when today is your reality, and you are speaking words that will affect someone else's today, guard your words. Be careful with words. Words, when spoken, they don't come back. You can't retrieve them. There's not a rewind. This is not unique, right? How often have you seen an environment or where you've heard a story where somebody says something about somebody else, and the person, you're talking about somebody, but hey, do you mind just, I'm going to use you as an example. Come here. Come on, come on. It won't embarrass you, I promise. So let's say I'm telling you something, okay? And all of a sudden, you look over my shoulder and you're like, the guy is right there, and you're like, yeah, exactly, like that. And you're like, okay, what, you know, kind of thing. And you're like, dude. And then you turn around and you go, oh, he's, okay, you can have a seat now. And then you go, ah, we were just talking about you. We were just saying, what if this would happen? Oh, this is nuts. And you try to just back out of that corner. Thanks a lot. But you try to back out of this corner. But how do you do it? How do you back out of that corner? Because what you've conveyed may have been truth, but it wasn't yours to tell. Sometimes there's a story that we have isn't ours to share, because it was somebody else's that was given to us, and that's where it was supposed to stay. You get called into the weirdest situations, right? Winkler Bible Camp, didn't you have to play an air guitar or something like that? Or is that your brother? Yeah. Ah, yeah, you did a really good job. I want to read something to you. Actually, there's two parts. There's a book by Michael Iaconelli. It's called Messy Spirituality. And, oh man, we've, at the center, at the youth center, the kids that walk through the door, the adults that walk through the door, the seniors that walk through the door and come share their messy reality is so cool. Constantly we're being given gifts. I want to read something to you that really made a difference to me, because it's something that I've been preaching, and some of you rehabbers, oh, how many people here are from rehab or have attended rehab? Look at this. They've all attended rehab. A lot of you are going, what is rehab and why are our children going there? Rehab is actually the name that ISCF has adopted. ISCF stands for Interscholastic Christian Fellowship, which is kind of Christianese for where young people get together on one or two days a week and they want to live Jesus together. And they decided on the name rehab because everybody can use some help. Thought that's pretty cool. Went to the school, went to the principal and said, okay, the kids want to call this rehab. She burst out laughing. This was Krista Curry. She says, if they're okay with it, I'm okay with it, she said. It was kind of neat. Anyway, a couple of years ago, my wife and I sat across the table from a woman we highly respect, a deeply spiritual lady who had profoundly impacted our lives. And this woman spent most of her life resisting the noise and activity of the world to seek God in silence and solitude. She had spent hundreds of weeks in silent retreat. This was a woman so saturated with her faith, you could almost smell God when she came into the room. We were talking about prayer. It's embarrassing to be sitting with you, I blurted. You spend days, weeks, even months in prayer, and I'm lucky if I spend 10 minutes. Compared to you, I'm not very spiritual, I'm afraid. Her eyes, flashing with anger, caught mine, and she fired back, oh, Mike, knock it off. First of all, you don't spend every day with me. You don't know me at all. You're comparing what you know about yourself to what you don't know about me. Secondly, I battle depression daily, and it has won several periods of my life, and I never told you about it. I don't even have a family. I like to be alone and silent. Trust me, I'm just as unspiritual as you are. And then she said gently, you think about God all the time, right? Well, sort of, I said. Well, thinking about God is being with God. And being with God is spirituality. thinking about God is praying. So shut up with this guilt stuff. You have been praying most of your life. You are a spiritual person. That is what I had to come to terms with. Because I kept thinking, even especially when I'm part of Youth for Christ, I'm like, Lord, what am I even doing? Like, honestly, often I come to work and I go, oh man, what am I doing today? Oh yeah, people. Yeah, I'm doing people. Okay. What people? Don't know yet. They haven't come through the door, but they will. Or I might get a phone call, or I might have to go to the police station, or a probation officer, somebody doing community service hours, but it'll be people. Oh Lord, really? More people? Yep. John, more people is what I called you to. I don't know if I really want more people, God. And this is my dialogue. You don't think this is prayer? I'm like, oh Lord, restore my heart. Give me a heart for the next person that walks through the door and don't let me rip their head off. Because sometimes I do. Because somebody comes in and they've been in for 30 consecutive times with the same story. I just want to shake them, and sometimes I have. And I grab them and I go, do you have anything new to say today? Oh no. Don't come in today. Come in when you got something new. And they leave. I go back to my chair and I think they're going to kill themselves. Oh great, I just killed somebody. But you know how often they've come back and said, you're right, I needed that. I do have something new. I don't need to tell you the same story. I just thought the only way I'd be able to come and talk to you at all is if I had the same story. You want a different story? I got a different story. And then they tell me this new story and go, oh wow, I wish I would have just had the old story. But that's the reality. And you know, I love my job. And my job is so nebulous. It said job description before. What is my job description? I don't know. Each day that I come to work, it's so different. I get to work with students on Tuesdays and Fridays in a church basement. That is so cool. I get to work with a grade 11 small group on Tuesday evenings. I get to work with a grade 8 small group Thursday at lunches at the middle school. I get to. I used to think it was like, I have to. No, I don't have to. I get to choose. And if I choose yes, then I get to. If I choose not, I don't get to. And sometimes when I'm going from work to home and it's been such a full day, I just say, God, make my trip home as uneventful as you can. I don't even want to say hi to anyone. I just want to get home. I want to get in my green chair. I want to lean back, watch my wife paint for a while, and breathe. And sometimes he lets me do that. I love those moments. I've had 3 of them. Yeah. Most of the time, if I'm really honest about it, there's people that are wanting to be observed, right? There's people that want to be interacted with. When Martin came over there and gave me a hug, I wrapped myself around him. I love that young man. Hey, are Rachel Friesen's parents here? Can I see your hands if you're here? Oh, I was praying for them because of Rachel. Wow, that's a handful, that lady. Wow. Woo. Is this being recorded? Yeah. Okay. I was looking forward to meeting them. Rachel and Jody are two sisters that love each other. And they do. They really do. But wow, at rehab, I think rehab was for them. No. They are two amazing people that I've come to love. I didn't know they were sisters. I was just wondering why this one girl would bug the daylights out of this other girl, and she would fire back, and they'd talk horses and music, and they were real. I love being in that group. And sometimes Joe is even organized. No, she is. In here, that girl is very organized. But she's got 12, 15, 18, 30 people sometimes feeding information to her, and somehow she's supposed to document that and give it to us, and we need to take that document to a pharmacist just to get it read. But that's our reality, right? But that's also yours. You do an amazing job. Actually, any of the people that are at rehab, have been at rehab, will be at rehab, they get loved by each other today. They go there on Tuesday because it's Tuesday today. They go there on Friday because it's Friday today. They're not looking beyond that day when they're there. We have prayer stuff that goes beyond the moment. Of course we do. God calls us to that. But for today, it's a safe place. This young man that's going to jail actually Facebooked messaged me and said, at least I know where I'll be. It's truthful, isn't it? At least he'll know where he is. We want to know where we are. And sometimes we can be right in the middle of it, but we don't recognize it. So the statement, what if it was tomorrow, and today we knew what tomorrow would bring, would we live this moment differently? See, God is asking us to reflect on that a little bit differently. How are you going to live right now? Who matters to you right now? Who would you like to have matter to you? Who do you matter to? Who can you influence for me? Because just like this verse says in Matthew 6, it is about God. It is how you reflect God today, now. And I found that there's actually less pressure in that than what I used to think. Because if really all I'm doing is trying to be as obedient as I can in the moment, it's not that hard. See, we sometimes think, I'm going to finish with this part, but my son asked me, actually a number of people have asked me, is smoking a sin? Is drinking a sin? Is premarital sex a sin? And I'm being careful with my answer, and you're going to think I'm being sacrilegious or something possibly. And I said, no. I think the heart that got it to believe it was okay, that's where the sin is. And then my brother-in-law gave me this beautiful statement, because I was kind of desperate, because I was being really conflicted, and I was reading this book and other things, and I said, dude, what is sin? And he says, it's easy. I said, really? It's that easy? He says, it is. Sin is a failure to love, because you cannot sin and love at the same time. If your heart is to love, you will not sin. There might be sinful actions at times. There might be things that you do that you hadn't realized that you were doing or saying or whatever. And this is a big brushstroke. I realize that, and it's a very big one. I'm not naive. I do understand what sin is. But if we really adopted that sin is a failure to love, wouldn't that be easier too? If you always filter that, okay, should I do this? I don't know. Am I showing love with this? Yes, do it. If the desire is to love, but it is important to go through that filter, isn't it? Some of you may say, hey, John, I want to have a conversation about that last thing you said. I'd be happy to have that conversation with you. And maybe it was too big of a sweep. But I think we have complicated it. And instead of having our young people, because that's who I primarily deal with, coming at me and saying, looking over their shoulder going, can I ever get rid of this? And I'll say to them, look forward. Look ahead. Don't look over your shoulder so much. Yeah, but everybody's reminding me about this stuff. You don't need to own it if you don't want it. And that's where you give them the options. And one of them happens to be Jesus. It's like this little girl I was watching here. It was so cool because she was sitting up front there. And we sometimes think to ourselves as Christians, why don't they get it? Why don't they get Jesus? Well, they don't get it because they don't get him yet. You got this little girl, and she wants to sit right here. You could tell she's like, oh, she wanted to, right? And she's sitting right there, and dad, I can't remember if it was dad or mom, but they're like, go, go. Looking over the shoulder, he's okay, yeah. And then finally she comes bolting over here. It was so cute, because the moment she sat down, everybody had to stand up because they were going to sing. But she's the only one left sitting, and she's going, okay, and then she stands up. But now she belonged. Sometimes a kid is doing that at the center. Can I just come in front of you? This Jesus stuff? Not that interested yet, John. They don't know it, but they actually are. Because I am the Jesus stuff. That it's youth for Christ. We're not hiding it. So there is this appetite. A woman that called me. Nope, she's not from this church. So I can do it. I don't want to insult anyone. But she had called me and said, and she did this every year. She said, so how many kids have you led to Christ this year, John? And I was dreading this call, and I knew her voice. And I was like, oh, Lord, how do I answer this time? And you know, you're in my mind, I'm already tabulating, okay, this kid, well, maybe this kid. And all of a sudden, God gave me an answer, and I blurted it out before I could even think, and I said, all of them. He says, what? We lead all of them to Christ. They make the choice whether they want to receive that or not. And her response was, I never thought of that before. Mine was, me neither. And we had this beautiful revelation. And you know what? She is now a prayer warrior of ours. She said, that freed me so much because she thought the numbers had to be locked into, right? They don't have to be locked into. God's got the numbers. And like I said, I know now that I was a Christian well before I was a Christian. I really was. I was saved before I knew it. And I'm so glad. Father, we sit, we stand here. We've got this family that wants to be together. And whether it's documents on an orange piece of paper or a green sticky note or with a pen or books, whatever, ultimately, we're a body that really does desire to be united in you. And actually, God, you say it very clearly that we better be, because this reflects on you. And that's such a relief. Because if our goal, if our desire is that it reflects well on you, that we reflect you well, maybe there's things we'd do differently. And maybe there's not. I'm just glad for this body. I'm glad for today. I'm glad for this moment. Because I get to be among people that I know love me, that have supported me, the ministry I'm a part of, your church. And they've done it with finances. But oh God, they have done it with prayer. And wow, do we take them. And Lord, we pray these things in your name. Amen.